Elmer Bernstein, one of the true greats of cinematic composition, over 150 original movie scores and 4 Oscar nominations to his name, and his music remains as fresh and vibrant today as when it was first experienced on the big screen by movie audiences from the 1950s onward. The Magnificent Seven, Ghostbusters and Cape Fear, amongst many others. And in a moment, I'll be joined by Joe Chibby, General Manager of the RTE Concert Orchestra, to answer our regular Tuesday question, where do I begin with? And he'll be talking about where to begin with in terms of Elmer Bernstein. Well, I'm going to start, for the moment anyway, here. You know, isn't it impossible to hear that without seeing Steve McQueen walking back over to solitary confinement and bouncing his baseball off the ground and the wall while doing so? That is Elmer Bernstein's music for The Great Escape. And Joe Chibby, General Manager of the RTE Concert Orchestra, is with me now to look back at an extraordinary career and recommend some of the highlights for you to listen to in your olden time. But The Great Escape is as good a place as any to start, I would have thought, Joe. But you worked with Elmer Bernstein. Before we get into his music, tell us about him, the man.
Well, he was an incredible character. He floated into the room. He was always welcoming, warm, upbeat and charismatic. It seemed that, you know, his pace in life was the pace that he did his recording sessions as well. You know, nothing was ever rushed. It was always polite and well-behaved, very fluid, keeping things moving. His writing ability and orchestration skills were, you know, that of a genius. I first worked with him actually on a film called The Grifters, which was a Martin Scorsese film, which starred John Cusack and Annette Bening. And it was a brass-heavy, street jazz, quirky rhythm section-driven soundtrack with the orchestra on top. And Elmer had the ability to write while standing on the podium. And this was the first time I'd actually ever witnessed this in anybody. It was quite startling, you know. He didn't have to sit at a piano. He could hear it in his head and he could adapt it to the score straight away. And he really included you in what he was doing. You know, if he wanted a change in the part, he'd come down and he'd stand beside you and he wouldn't bring the score. He'd come down with his pencil and he'd change the part.
Wow.
That you were reading from, you know. So he was quite you were part of it. You know, you were in his party. You know, you were committed to his score. Because of that, he was a very personable person, you know.
But you mentioned there the brass heavy aspect of the Grifters, and certainly not always, but to a large extent, I would have thought Elmer Bernstein, if you know, we will be playing the Magnificent Seven at some point along the way. You know, when you think of Western music and Ennio Morricone, you're thinking of a much sparser type of music. Elmer Bernstein loved the big sound. He loved the big orchestration, didn't he?
He did, yeah. I think that's, you know, he came from his background. Well, his background was he was training as a concert pianist, and he was more an improviser than a reader. So he loved improvising. I think he loved jazz, and then he got obviously he had to go to war in World War II as part of the army. But he was a score writer, and he entertained the troops. So he would have been used to that sort of the marching band scenario, the jazz style, brass lit rhythm section sort of environment. So I think because of that, he just loved the energy of brass instruments and woodwind instruments. So he kind of wrote in that style. And The Great Escape is a good example of that. And The Man with the Golden Arm, which is in a jazzy style, but it's still brass instruments, you know, still woodwind. And then there's an orchestra on top, you know, but it's very much he loved to keep it lit. That's for sure.
And he was part of that New York. The Jewish immigrant family that he came from, you know, not dissimilar in lots of ways to George Gershwin, Leonard Bernstein, Andre Previn, Irving Berlin. Is there something in that tradition that feeds into the way he orchestrates, feeds into his music?
Well, I think if you look from before that time, lots of people were getting out of Europe, you know, so Central, Eastern Europe, you know, and they came with a bag of goods, which were, they They had amazing instruments. You know, these are musician types, I suppose, had amazing instruments. They had amazing educations in amazing education in academic music through the teaching of their colleges, etc. And they were bringing that to America. And all of these guys, you know, they had that skill set, and they entered into the golden age of Hollywood. They had departments of composers and orchestrators and copyists and heads of music, and they all existed, which, you know, that doesn't exist unless you're on a big film today. It's usually one, three people, because technology exists. It's narrowed right down. So the director goes right to the composer, he writes, and it's delivered, you know, so it's probably a copyist or whatever involved. But they were there at the right time. They had the right knowledge. They were multi-genre musicians and composers. They loved, you know, I think they loved the environment of writing as well. Everything, you know, melodic themes and motifs were being mixed up with different styles of harmony, be it jazz or more contemporary music. They used operatic choices to tie into characters. So it was an amazing time, you know, the great, great knowledge and understanding of innovation of music as well, you know, be it tradition, jazz, classical, world music. They just got involved. They were rich in creativity, yeah. You know.
I'll come back to what happened to him around the McCarthy era and the House on American Activities, all of that. But I just want to get another bit of music in, and this is from a little bit later on. His score for Cape Fear, not quite as bright and breezy as The Great Escape, it has to be said, but just as big. Yes, the darkness of Cape Fear, caught perfectly there by Elmer Bernstein in his score for the film. Joe Chibby with me this evening is talking about where to start with Elmer Bernstein. And that's a nod, actually. We were all saying it here as we were listening. You can hear Bernard Herrmann in there for sure, can't you?
Big time, yeah, absolutely. So I think that was a he maybe did a rework and a tip of the hat to Bernard Herrmann's original score, which is amazing, you know. And when you think of, I remember watching that when I was younger, and Robert De Niro at his craziest.
Yeah.
My God,
yeah,
it was really, really, really very scary film.
Yeah, and. I'll come back now to that whole idea of, because that was his career had to be revived effectively after the McCarthy era. He didn't name names. He refused to get involved in that whole side of things. What happened to him because of that?
Well, he did work as a pianist and a composer for a small communist party, which were Friends of America. But just because of that, you know, the witch hunt, I suppose, was on, and you could get blacklisted for any sort of left to centre ideas about politics in that time. And he wasn't a member of a communist party, but he was grey-listed, which meant they only half went after him. But the contracts for the big films went south, you know, and he ended up doing B-movies like Robot Monster and Catwoman of the Moon. So not ideal for someone like Elmer Bernstein, but he was caught up in that. But at the same time, when he was caught up in it, McCarthy was already being censored by the Senate. So he was kind of, you know, he was, it seems like he was going to be okay. So he was actually working for Cecil B. DeMille at the time, and he was famously anti-communist. And he was the president of the organization called the Motion Pictures Alliance, which was devoted to keeping communist propaganda out of movies. But DeMille liked Elmer, it seems. So he called him to his office and he asked him straight out. He said, "Are you a member of a communist party?" And Elmer just said, "Not a chance. No, I'm not." You know, so apparently he stared at him. He stared him down for about 10, 20 seconds and he believed his story. But I mean, that saved his career because Cecil B. DeMille was such a heavyweight in the music industry, and it got him onto, it was at the, I suppose, the misfortune of another composer who was very ill at the time, but it got him onto the Ten Commandments, which was basically, you know, Wagner in Egypt, with Charlton Heston and Yul Brynner. And I was looking at the figures for that movie, and actually it only cost 10, 12 million to make, but it made 115 million at box office. So it was a massive hit, you know, and it took care of his career in a way. He was so big then, you know.
Yeah, and again, Cecil B. DeMille, Charlton Heston, the Ten Commandments. Yeah. We're talking big score. We're talking big everything, as you say, Wagner on the screen.
Big time.
He was capable of writing in a much more, I suppose, reflective and smaller style as well. And this one will bring us a little bit closer to home. My Left Foot. Let's have a listen. go. Some of Emily Bernstein's music for My Left Foot. Joe Chibby speaking to us about the great American film composer this evening. And really, there, obviously, the brass were blown out at that point. Their lips were done. But, and he said, take a bit of time off. It is a much thinner type of texture. And thinner isn't the right word. It's just not as heavy as the brass-based stuff that we've been listening to up to this.
No, and it's actually very light. So, I mean, I suppose when you look at My Left Foot, it was a very heavy narrative. But, he made it quite childlike as well, you know. So, I mean, you hear an instrument in there called the Owens Martineau. And if you were a fan of Star Trek back in the day, that was the instrument that you heard. And it was a keyboard instrument and also like an electronic sort of wire that was followed with a little ring around a stick, you know. And that created this wavering sort of flute-like a sound, you know. But it was the first time we had seen it in Ireland. So he certainly was a trendsetter in terms of creating new sonic sort of soundscapes, you know.
And how did they get Bernstein on board for My Left Foot, do you know?
Well, he was a friend of Noel Pearson's. So Noel Pearson, obviously the great theatre producer, obviously, and he went into films then, and he won an Oscar with My Left Foot. Mm. But they were just friends. When Noel Pearson got married, apparently he went to Elmer's house in California, and he stayed with him for a while with his new wife and whatever. So they just, I don't know, they were just friends. They became friends through other friends, I suppose. You know,
yeah. And did he do the music for the wedding?
Probably did.
Wouldn't be bad if Elmer Bernstein as your music composer for your wedding, would it?
No.
And in terms then of the type of legacy that he has, that Bernstein has across film music, how would you describe that, Joe?
Well, I think he was definitely a trendsetter. He came from a good time in music in Hollywood. He was able to cross so many different genres, you know. So he was a guy who started as a classical piano player, and then he was obviously schooled by Aaron Copland, who was a big American composer. And then he went into the army band scenario. So he had all these great skill sets. He knew a lot of languages and music, and he had this great ability to write for scenes. So he sort of wrote them like they were an opera in a way, you know. So, and one very interesting thing was I was speaking to Brian Masterson, who was a co-owner in Windmill Lane, Rings End Road Studios. I was talking to him last night, and he engineered and mixed Elmer's sessions when he was in Ireland. And Elmer spoke to him about the first emotion, and the first emotion he referred to was what we see on the screen, and the emotion after that is what is created by the music. And I thought this was really interesting. So he wrote for the second emotion. So he looked for something else to add on to it and underpin the first emotion. So that was quite interesting. And he said to Brian, he said, "I've never told anybody that." So Brian had a private secret he was carrying for the last 30 years.
And now we all know.
We all know, yeah. So it was quite amazing. He had this, you know, he looked at everything. He was very, very clever.
Interesting way of thinking of it, though. The visuals are the first emotion, the music is the second emotion. Some might argue with that, but it's a very interesting point. We'll finish with The Magnificent Seven. This is him at his best, Joe.
Brilliant, absolutely, yeah. Western score, you know, I mean, when you think of everything that he's done and he's doing a score for a Western, it's just brilliant.
See, we don't get much chance to get out into the big wide open world at the moment, do we? But the music of Elmer Bernstein can certainly make you feel as if you're on the open plains of the western states of America. That is his music from The Magnificent Seven, and it was Joe Chibby who was speaking to us tonight about where we might begin with the music of Elmer Bernstein and bringing tonight's programme to a finish. Leah Murphy, Paula Shields research, Janice Murphy was the broadcast coordinator, Kieran Dunn was on sound this evening, and tonight's programme was produced by Olam McGowan. Talk to you tomorrow night at 7.